From the Southwest Airlines Weather Observation Deck, you're listening to Red Belly Radio. Hello, and thank you for listening to Red Belly Radio. My name is Steve Heiser. Yes, sometimes I make up fictitious names for a department, but this one's real. Well, sort of. I am on the deck at our headquarters observing the weather, which currently makes it the Weather Observation Deck. Now, perhaps because I work for an airline or because I've seen TV in the last few weeks, it seems like there have been so many hurricanes this year. I thought we might learn more about hurricanes and how Southwest Airlines reacts to them. My first guest is Chief Meteorologist Rick Curtis. I sat down with him to learn about hurricanes and how they're named. Rick, welcome to Red Belly Radio.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here.
Now, in my research about hurricane naming and looking up the list of names and stuff, it dawned on me, why are hurricanes named?
Well, in the early days, they didn't really have a good way of naming and telling storms between the two. So there'd be storms, multiple storms out in the ocean, and they couldn't figure out which one they were talking about. So they started talking about latitudes and longitudes, and then all of a sudden that got very confusing to when you had, especially with multiple storms. So they came up with a naming convention. And interestingly enough, when they started naming these storms, they were named after females only. And then they changed that in the late 70s and then finally had a mix of alternating mix of male and female names. And also, they got more of an international flair on their names. They used to be just solely American U.S. names, and now they have more of a Caribbean feel to them. So it's a lot of interesting things about naming.
And the name, if it starts out female this year, it'll start out male next year, and they alternate that way?
Correct. It alternates between every storm and then every year, and then they reuse the names every 6 years. The only exception to that is if there's a huge storm, I think it's Category 3 or greater, they actually retire the name. So we will never see another Hurricane Katrina again. So they'll actually retire the name, and then what they'll do is then get a new name for that individual letter.
Who comes up with these names? Who keeps the list?
Well, there's a committee called the World Meteorological Organization has a committee with names, and it's that committee's job to come up with the names. And interestingly enough, there's separate names for the Atlantic hurricanes. There's separate names for the Pacific hurricanes. Also in the Indian Ocean and in the South Seas and around Australia, they have their own naming. So there's lots of different sets of names, and that group is responsible for all the names for all parts of the world.
So there's a list of names for regions of the world that have hurricanes, or what, in fact, they're not even called hurricanes in the southern hemisphere.
Really, we're the only people that really call them hurricanes, us and the Europeans. The Asians call them cyclones, and down south in Australia, New Zealand, they're called Willy Willys, believe it or not. So kind of
that sounds Australian, so I believe that. Now, hurricanes are not actually named. The tropical storm is named, and then it becomes a hurricane. So at what point does a storm become a nameable storm?
Well, there's kind of phases of these things. It starts out with a suspect area, and then if the winds start to come together and you start to see some sort of circulation on the storm, then they'll upgrade it to what's called a tropical depression. And it still doesn't have a name at that point. Once it's a tropical depression, it's called they assign a number to it. So they keep those straight. So this might be tropical depression number 11. And then once the winds hit a sustained value of 39 miles per hour, then it finally gets a name. So, and then they just pick the next name off the list.
And then a hurricane, it becomes a hurricane at what stage?
Becomes a hurricane when the winds get to 74 miles per hour sustained or greater.
And then you hear categories, you know, 1, 2, 3, and on. Well, how high does it go? How high category?
Well, the category system is called the Saffir-Simpson scale. And basically it goes from 1 to 5 in each category has its own threshold of wind value. So that's how we basically tell, you know, what category the storm is. And then also there's tremendous variability in terms of what damage can be expected between category 1, category 2, category 3 as we move on up the line. And what they do is they try and assign a category so that when people, if some storm like that is headed to your region, that you can kind of give the folks there some sort of a anticipation level of what to expect in terms of damaging winds, storm surge, that sort of thing.
How much plywood to buy?
Exactly.
Now, we were talking about the names. They don't actually go A through Z. They go A through W and leave Q and U out. Have you ever gone actually all the way through the list? What do they do then? Start over?
Yeah, well, they don't use Q or U or X or Y or Z. And the reason that is that there's just not enough names to be able to use those letters. So what they do is they skip those. And then if we ever did go through the list, and that's only happened once, and that was in 2005, that was the year that Katrina and Rita and Wilma and all those other storms that affected our system, they actually went through the whole alphabet, and then they started over with the Greek alphabet. So the next storm was Alpha, Beta, and they went all the way to Gamma. Okay, so we got three letters into the Greek alphabet back in 2005.
Four. Alpha, Beta, Delta, no, Gamma?
Delta is actually after Gamma in the Greek alphabet.
Okay. See, that's what I get for questioning a meteorologist. Now, hurricanes in this hemisphere spin counterclockwise. Is that right?
That's correct. All areas of low pressure in the northern hemisphere spin counterclockwise.
So it'd be the same for tornadoes.
Correct.
And opposite side of the equator, other side of the world, they'd spin the opposite direction, clockwise.
That's correct. Actually, in the southern hemisphere, they turn the other way.
What would happen if a storm crossed the equator? Would it just freak out and...
Luckily, that's never happened. The reason it is that there's this border line around the equator that kind of acts as a buffer zone. It keeps the weather separate.
It's a big fence, is that what you're saying?
Exactly. The big fence there right along the equator.
Now, of course, not a whole lot of companies have their own staff meteorologists, but I would imagine airlines would be one of those types of companies that we really, really, really want to know what the weather's doing. Is this pretty standard for airlines to have a meteorologist?
Yeah, most of them have in-house. Certainly all the international carriers that are flying folks abroad would have in-house staff meteorologists. And also the ones that don't typically contract out, there's private weather firms that do offer these services. So, you know, it's a variety, but probably the majority of the larger ones have their own.
If I wanted, like, Hurricane Steve, could I petition somebody to get Steve on the list?
Well, what we could do is get you hooked up with the World Meteorological Organization, and believe it or not, they do solicit names. And with this committee, wouldn't you love to be at this committee meeting and say, okay, we got five Harrys, a Nancy, and a Sally, and sit and figure out how that all works?
I should imagine a lot of coin tossing, but yeah.
Yeah. You know, maybe somebody's children are named this or whatever. So I'm sure there's a fair, but seriously, you can submit that through. And if anybody would be interested in doing that, I could help with that.
Well, you could, I'm sure, find more information on the internet how to do that. Gosh, I know you're busy with, what is it, Hurricane Ike this week. You're tracking, and I appreciate you taking the time talking with me.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. It was great.
Rick and his team feed the most up-to-date weather information to our dispatch department, who use it to decide how to route aircraft and, in the event of a hurricane, when to evacuate airports. Fortunately, an airline's biggest asset is mobile, and we can fly those assets inland to safety. My next guest is Fred Taylor, who's the Senior Manager, Proactive Customer Service Communications. Fred, congratulations on having the longest title of anyone I've ever met.
Yeah, that's a little pretentious, but it certainly nails down exactly what we are asked to do for Southwest Airlines.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what your group does?
Well, overall, my team of five is responsible for evaluating disruptions of our flight service and then providing our customers, internal and external, with proactive explanations about what occurred, what the company is doing in response to those disruptions, and we often provide our customers with either accommodations or incentives to give Southwest another try.
Now that's pretty much any kind of delay. It could be a mechanical, it could be air traffic, but lately it could also be some hurricanes. We've had quite an active hurricane season this year. Of course, we can't you know, an airline can only do so much. It's going to rain. It's going to storm. What can we really do for people who it's an act of nature?
Well, we can do a lot, actually. We can first, from a company point of view, we can get organized. We can make sure that all of our employees are on the same page insofar as what the company is doing to either evaluate the situation, what our game plan is to take action against whatever Mother Nature throws our way. And then we take responsibility for our actions and communicate that both with our employees as well as our customers. So we're all on the same page insofar as what the company is doing in response to that particular situation.
And, well, how do you communicate with all these customers? You don't call them up one by one.
Well, in some instances, we do.
As a really?
Fact. Yeah, if we feel like there's been an immediate change in our flight schedule or a particular flight, we will utilize our new automated outbound notification system to contact the customers on the affected flight, advise them that there has been a change in the flight status, and then refer them to our reservations employees so they can help with their accommodations.
Do all airlines offer this sort of service?
Well, we know that the other airlines do contact their customers. Insofar as the capacity is concerned, I can't speak specifically to it, but what we're trying to do with automated outbound messaging is to offer our customers a concierge service. So eventually we'll have this product developed out where we not only notify you about a flight disruption, but we also offer you the accommodation and have a game plan in place so when we contact you or when you contact us, we already have you reaccommodated.
Well, given the current hurricane season, what role does your team play in this weather response plan?
Right. Well, our goal overall is to make sure our employees, all employees, are on the same page insofar as the company's weather disruption response plan is concerned. And then we, the proactive customer service communication team, want to ensure that our customers are also receiving the appropriate information and assistance. And more specifically, from a weather disruption task force point of view, our team is responsible for making sure the company's internal and external communications are consistent and properly implemented. And then we also serve an administrative function for the task force by coordinating the meetings and issuing task force briefings and updates to our executive leaders, our customer communication groups, as well as our support departments.
My only real question about hurricanes is why do local news crews always feel the need to send their people into dangerous situations and show us a reporter getting rained on? Maybe if Red Belly Radio ever gets a big enough budget, which is to say a budget, I'll be sent to cover a big storm. Although I would like to say for the record that I'd rather cover, oh, I don't know, like a golf tournament in maybe Las Vegas. Well, that does it for this episode. Red Belly Radio is a trademark of the Southwest Airlines Company. This episode is copyrighted 2008. The captain has indicated that we have come to the conclusion of this podcast. Please turn off and stow all portable electronic devices.